This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Today we'll visit with Baton Rouge Advocate editorial page editor Danny Heitman. He is going to comment on a few things, but he is part of a panel tomorrow night at the Magnolia Theater. Louisiana Public Broadcasting is recording an episode of Louisiana Public Square devoted to the power of reading. Also joining us, LPB President and CEO Beth Courtney and Kevin Gautreau, who's the producer of this event. We'll also hear from Jason Brown of Keene Miller on the intricacies of collecting sales taxes on internet purchases and the options available in our state. And John Wirt, the movie critic, who had a fine review Friday in The Advocate of Black Klansman, a movie that opened over the weekend, and it features the notorious David Ernest Duke. We'll talk with John Wirt. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Becca Dill's producing. If you'd like to dial locally in Baton Rouge and save a few digits, 297-5633, you can reach us by email at talk@talklouisiana.org. And we start today with three distinguished guests. Beth Courtney, the president, CEO of Louisiana Public Broadcasting, is here, along with producer Kevin Gautreau, and Danny Heitman, who will go into overtime with us to talk about a few different matters. He's the editorial page editor for The Advocate, and he's been writing editorials for the newspaper of record in Louisiana for 14 years. 877-217-577. Tried to go too fast. 877-217-5757. Tomorrow night at Baton Rouge Community College's Magnolia Theater, Louisiana Public Broadcasting is recording an episode of Louisiana Public Square devoted to the power of reading. And Beth Courtney, let's start with you. You will be a moderator along with Robin Merrick from Southern University. What exactly will you be focusing upon? Some of the great novels, I would think. What's on the forefront?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is have excitement around reading. And that's the PBS series, The Great American Read, has generated the interest in this. And we think that becoming committed to reading and books and makes such a difference in the lives of everyone. And we're going to talk about, in Louisiana, why we have some challenges, because certainly we have a lot of adults who are illiterate, but we also have the opportunity to turn things around because we have a great literary tradition. And so it's going to be an exciting night. We also want to ask people about their favorite book. So if you get passionate about reading and writing, we think it will make a difference in the lives of everyone.
Well, a lot of erudite people don't read that much, especially don't read novels. I remember the President of the United States a few years back was on CNN, and they asked him his favorite novel, and he said Bonfire of the Vanities, but he said Vanity of the Bonfires, which indicates to me that he might have read the cover and got it wrong, and he obviously reads other things, but he's not a big voracious consumer of novels. Danny Heitman, you are. And what are some of the novels that have touched you through the years?
I would say my favorite novel is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, and I know a lot of people in our listenership here would agree with me, but just the poetry and the sense of acute observation that Harper Lee brought to that book, and also the way she simulates how the world is perceived through the eyes of a child, is just so memorable and touching to me. And, of course, her commentary on life in the South really resonates with me, too.
Did she write it?
I think she did. There's been speculation that perhaps Truman Capote helped her write the book. There's no substantive evidence that happened. And so I think she did write the book, sure.
Okay. Now, there are some great Louisiana novelists, as we know. Listening across the river right now is Ernest Gaines, and I think he ranks with some of the greats of all time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, A Lesson Before Dying. I mean, that's going to be in the first paragraph of Mr. Gaines' obituary whenever that happens, and I hope that's not anytime soon, but he certainly has a place in world literary history. just based on that book.
Jim, you know, we were looking back at all of our wonderful Louisiana authors, and we realized at LPB we have done documentaries about Ernest Gaines. We've also done Kate Chopin, The Awakening, one of the great novels of all time. We've done documentaries involving books and authors throughout the years, and I was disappointed in this big 100 list that they did not have, especially Ernest Gaines, one of my favorite authors of all times. The only author they have in the book from Louisiana is Confederacy of Dunces. So therefore, I'm saying let's all vote for Confederacy of Dunces. Right now in the rankings, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn is leading To Kill a Mockingbird. So I'm sort of interested in knowing.
Okay, so you're pushing for Confederacy of Dunces. So there will actually be a vote.
Yes, there's a big vote.
Of the top 100, like, which will be number one.
Exactly.
And we only have one choice. Walker Percy doesn't have anything on that list?
I know. We've done a documentary on Walker as well. A movie goer, one of my all-time favorites. And, of course, we just have such wonderful literature out of Louisiana.
Yesterday, my friend and former college chum, John Ed Bradley, turned 60 years old. He's written some good novels. Louisiana has been blessed with some exceptional writers. We produce them about as well as we produce athletes and chefs, and it's part of our culture.
I think that we are a storytelling culture, and that very much informs the quality of our literature. We love to talk in Louisiana, and we love to tell stories.
We do indeed, and this is an opportunity to show your support for the Confederacy of Dunces. And Kevin Gautreau is the LPB producer who has put this panel together, and there will be some others in addition to Danny and Beth who are involved. Who else is involved in this project?
Sure, Jim. We have with the Southern Independent Booksellers Alliance, Linda Marie Barrett. They are one of the underwriters for the program. We've got Rebecca Hamilton, the Louisiana State Librarian. We have Danny, of course, and we have Miranda Restovich with Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. One of their big programs is something called Primetime Family Reading. It's an intergenerational program that is now in 8 other states. And then we have Gary Robertson. He's with Adult Literacy Advocates. And Robin, who will be moderating, her mother, besides being an educator, was a librarian. So it's a really good fit for her.
All right. And Beth Courtney, your favorite novel?
I would say probably Robert Penn Warren and,
All the Kingsmen. Well, there's another Pulitzer Prize winner, yeah,
right.
for All the Kingsmen, written when he was in Louisiana.
I will say that. On the other hand, I will confess, when I was growing up, I read Lord of the Rings, Tolkien, when we were living overseas. We were a military family. And in the local library, they only had the first 2 books, and they didn't have the 3rd book where they concluded everything. And I was berserk. I was beside myself. I thought, we have to go to the Library of Congress, and I can find the 3rd book. That was my desire. So Tolkien has always been a big
You mentioned the problem with literacy in our state. It's not unique to Louisiana, but it's significant. And beyond reading Walker Percy or Robert Penn Warren or Ernest Gaines, some people just can't read. How are you addressing this, if at all, with this panel tomorrow?
Well, Kevin, I'll let you talk.
Yeah, we're actually going to be highlighting. We have the format of our monthly series, Louisiana Public Square, is a citizen roundtable discussion about the topic, followed by a Q&A with a panel of experts. But at the head of the program, we'll have an overview video setup piece, and it'll talk about the problem. For instance, the national adult illiteracy rate is 15%, but here in Louisiana, it's 20%. So we're going to highlight some of the programs that are being done to address that. And as I mentioned, we're going to have Gary Robertson with the Adult Literacy Advocates. They're out of Baton Rouge, but there are organizations like his all around the state. And we're actually going to have a person on our discussion panel, the audience members. We're going to have a graduate of the program. Well, actually, she's working with his program to learn to earn her high set. So we're going to, I guess, if you want to say in general terms, we're going to be highlighting the literacy challenges that Louisiana has, but we're also going to highlight the many opportunities to improve our literacy rate through both our audience members and the group that's on the panel.
All right, and this is tomorrow, the 14th, at Baton Rouge Community College's Magnolia Theater. What time is...
Sure, we're open to the public at 5:30. We're going to have people... we're actually three book vendors selling books, book titles from the Great American Reads 100 Top List. We'll have people recording testimonials, what's your favorite book. We'll have some refreshments, and then we'll begin taping at 7 p.m. and end right after 8 o'clock.
And this will air on the 22nd.
It will air the following Wednesday, the 22nd, on LPB. That's at 7 p.m., and that will actually be during a pledge night, which is a back-to-school night.
All right, so that's Wednesday, the 22nd, when the program will air, but it will be taped tomorrow. And you can show up starting at 5:30 at Baton Rouge's Community College's Magnolia Theater. A question from a listener, this one from Holly in the Garden District, Danny, about these 100 lists, and I've seen a few of them, of the best novels. Generally, it's chock full of writers from years gone by, not many contemporary writers. Are the writers today, are they less adroit at writing than those of their past?
I think we have writers today that are as strong as ever. It could be that our readership is down and that people are not talking these books up the way that they once did. So.
But we have an awful lot of contemporary writers on this list that the PBS has put out, which is very interesting. Some are controversial, one would say, but many of them, mm-hmm. I was saying, like Ready Player One, which is a movie that has just come out, is on this list, and certainly the Harry Potter books and the Hunger Game books.
Philip Roth is on there, I hope, who
yes.
just died. Yeah, yeah. He wrote a few controversial books.
Sure, and I think the goal of these lists is to begin a discussion, not to end one. And I think it's just great that we can have these discussions about what's on and what's not.
Sure. Well, we'll continue talking with Danny about some of the events in the world and in our state after we pause for this break. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Becca Dill's producing, and now we have Danny Heitman all to himself and to ourselves, the erudite editorial page editor for The Advocate, and he writes editorials along with, usually it's Lanny Keller, it's usually Danny or Lanny writing what we read in the newspaper, the unsigned editorials for the newspaper. And they, of course, opine about major things happening both in the international and in the United States worlds. But in Louisiana, there's always a great deal to write about and to talk about, Danny Heitman. You don't have a dearth of topics in our state.
I think in terms of, as you've mentioned on your show, Jim, Louisiana really, for a state this size, produces more news than probably any other state
per
in
capita,
the country.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Barry and Mid-City. Let's see here. Let's see if we can pull up Barry and Mid-City. You're going to have to do it, Becca. I'm having some challenges pulling up the phone line here. So there we go. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, and really enjoying your show once again, dear Jim. I wonder if Danny is familiar with the late author Kent Harruff. That's H-A-R-U-F. His most well-known novel was Souls at Night, which of course became a movie, and one of my favorite of his five or six that he wrote before he passed is called Benediction. And I'm hoping that with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which I'm lucky enough to participate in as a teacher, a course I'm proposing on Kent Harruff will be approved for the fall, and maybe Danny could come talk with us about it.
All right.
Sure. The interesting thing about Kent Harruff is he composed his novels blindfolded. That was a ritual that he did to sort of get in the mental space that he needed to compose his novel. So he actually typed at a typewriter blindfolded, and you would think he would make a lot of mistakes typing blindfolded, but his wife, who would review his manuscripts after they were completed, said he made surprisingly few errors in spite of that. So that to me is a case study in the fact that there are thousands of ways to write, and the ultimate test of whether it works is if it works for you. So.
There are some writers, some of the great ones, who wrote everything longhand. never really put it on a typewriter until the finished product, which probably was done by somebody else. But sometimes it's more of a personal thing when you're doing it with your own hand than when you're at a keyboard. How do you write, Danny?
I write at a keyboard, and I guess the only thing that I would find idiosyncratic about how I write is that I write in a newsroom where there's lots of noise, and I guess most journalists over time learn to tune that out. Mm-hmm. I've had people ask me, how can you possibly compose with so much noise? I think I would actually feel strange if I were composing in a quiet room.
So. Yeah, our friend John Word will be with us later. I see him doing his work in coffee shops. Some people thrive on the cacophony around them. That stimulates the creative juices.
Well, it certainly worked for John. I mean, he's one of the finest writers we have in Baton Rouge, and I think whatever he's doing, he needs to keep doing it because he's a fine writer.
I've seen your colleague Lanny Keller do exactly the same thing. So some people can't just do it in a quiet space. It doesn't work for them.
Sure. Well, Lanny is very much a social creature, and I think that informs the columns that he writes. So.
And through the years, old newsrooms, there would be lots of cigarette smoking, even some alcoholic beverage consumption. Those days largely are gone, though.
Well, sadly, the alcohol was gone by the time I started working in a newsroom in 1986. I did come in on the tail end of the AP machine, the wire that would clank out the news, and that was an extremely loud machine. Now, it, of course, just comes in on the Internet. But newsrooms have gotten somewhat quieter than they used to be, but there's still quite a bit of stimulation in them.
And another listener asks about writer's block. Sometimes it helps when you're with other people and you just can't get it cranked up. Talking will stimulate ideas. Or walking, movement. Some of your best ideas, I bet, Danny Heitman, come in the shower.
Or whenever I'm cutting grass. Yeah. Sometimes when you're just not really trying consciously to think about things is whenever it sort of comes in at an angle into your brain. I think writer's block is just people that don't want to get down to work. You know, I mean, I think if you were to talk to a carpenter or an engineer or a surgeon, they would also say there's times when they just don't want to work and they don't feel inspired to do it. So I don't think there's anything especially mystical about writer's block. It's just something you have to work through.
And Danny, who is a man of letters, one of the smartest people I know, you didn't go to Harvard or Yale or Brown. You went to...
I went to Southeastern from 1982 to 1986. I'm very pleased with the education that I got there. There was a wonderful journalism teacher, Joseph Miranda, who's still teaching there. And then, of course, Vic Cuvion, also in the journalism department. Delmas Crisp, who was the chair of the English department. Larry Gray in the English department there. I just got a really good grounding in writing and the classics, and I can't say enough good things about the education I got at Southeastern.
Another listener, Tracy, notes that it was 2 years ago exactly when we were dealing with the historic flood here in Baton Rouge, and quite often catastrophic events produce great writing. But at the same time, when you're in the midst of that and you're living through it, it adds another layer of dimension to it, doesn't it?
Well, 2 years ago, we were dropping our son off at the Louisiana School for Math, Science, and the Arts. It was a terribly rainy day. My wife logged onto Facebook at a restaurant, and we saw a picture of my sister in a boat being taken out of her neighborhood. And quite frankly, I couldn't believe it. I thought I was in some sort of dreamscape. It had to be, you know, 100 times as surreal to her, actually living through the experience. She just got back in her house maybe last month, 6 weeks ago. So these things take a long time to recover from often, and it takes a long time to process mentally. I'm not sure that she's fully processed it herself.
A few years ago, I recall asking you some of your favorite columnists, and I remember you saying David Brooks was a favorite of yours. I do recall that. What about your favorite novelists?
Well, Beth Courtney earlier had mentioned Robert Penn Warren. Just really like her a lot. There's a novelist that I've just recently gotten into, William Boyd, who wrote a wonderful book called Blue Afternoon. Just his gift for observation is really... stellar. You mentioned Walker Percy. I think he's underappreciated. I heard a story from a lady who used to be the librarian in Covington where Walker Percy lived. She said he would actually come into the library while he was alive, go to the P's in the fiction section just to see if his books had been checked out. And oddly enough, they often had not been checked out in a while, and so they would actually get his books off the shelf and rubber stamp them to falsify some checkout mm-hmm. dates to make him feel better. But a prophet is often not loved in his own home, as you know.
So. A few years ago, more than a few, it's been probably at least 10, I remember David Madden, when Kurt Vonnegut died, April 11, 2007, David Madden made probably a tactical error. He said he didn't like Slaughterhouse-Five, and he said he never got so much hate mail. People were vicious about it because they take their favorites personally, and for some people, that particular novel made a huge impression on them.
Well, sure. I mean, I remember in high school when a classmate told me, you absolutely have to read this new book called A Confederacy of Dunces. It will make you laugh until you cry. I didn't believe anything could be quite as good as it was promoted. And so I, with some reluctance, got the book, started reading it. I thought I was going to have to be hospitalized. I laughed so hard reading that book. And I revisited that book last year just to make sure that it was still as good as it was when I read it in high school, and it still holds up. It's just absolutely phenomenal.
And a great backstory, a sad backstory, but it was rejected before
sure.
the author.
And Walker Percy helped get it published. So.
Yep, he sure did. But John Kennedy Toole took his life.
Yeah, and, very sad.
Ultimately, it became a huge success. We'll spend a bit more time with Danny Heitman, and then we'll hear from one of the top attorneys in Baton Rouge, Jason Brown, after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Danny Heitman, editorial page editor of The Advocate. He's involved with this LPB panel on reading tomorrow night, saluting the great novels of all time. The panel will have a place at Baton Rouge Community College's Magnolia Theater tomorrow evening. Okay, Danny. Ernest Hemingway, we did not mention him. And a listener says any list of the top 100 books of all time has to include Hemingway. I hope he's on the list with one of his books.
I can't speak to whether he's on the list or not. I do know Hemingway started as a newspaper man, and he learned his gift for simplicity by writing newspaper prose. So we in the newspaper trade have a special affection for Hemingway and a special pride in Hemingway.
Let's try Ray in Prairieville now. Ray, I think we have you. Good morning to you.
It sounds clear, Jim. Thanks for taking the call. And I'd like to thank Mr. Heitman for his editorials. Very progressive. The one point I guess I'd like to bring up was the state of Louisiana keeps being rated 47th to 50th worst and everything from roads to schools to whatever. And yet, we don't rate our legislature that way. And I really think that we have to recognize that a lot of that comes from the legislature. And I'd like to see them do some. I was just at the Lady of the Lake a few minutes ago talking about one of the people about the lack of bike lanes. One of the best forms of outside exercise is bicycling. But we don't have any places, not regular places for bicycling. And we also have terribly rated schools and roads. I'd like to see whether Mr. Heitman recognizes or mentions that the legislature is at fault on a lot of this thing.
Well, there's a great way to rate our legislators, and that's at the voting booth. That's the best way to rate them. And I think if people are not happy with their lawmakers, they should express their displeasure at the voting booth.
All right. Thank you, Ray. This is Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Danny.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, I understand that Hemingway had to type standing up because he had an injury that he suffered while reporting on wars. I think he went to the Spanish Civil War. and reported on that. One of my favorite authors wrote No Country for Old Men, and I have to have the guts to read that again because it's such a strong book, and there's so much hard truth in that. And I think your reading is just an incredible gift that we have. So anyway, thank you, and have a good day. Bye.
I have thought about Hemingway recently because a lot of folks are recommending that more of us work standing up. And Hemingway was kind of a pioneer with that. He did indeed write his novels standing up, which is something that would take a while for me to get used to.
All right. George, outside the Advocate. Hi, George. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Oh, hello, Jim. As one of Dan, when Danny was speaking about the noise of the newsroom, two thoughts came to mind, one of which is that a healthy percentage of that in our newsroom is because I'm in it. But the other was the late Dan Hardesty, who, of course, you remember, Jim, as the sports editor in Baton Rouge from the late 40s.
A good man, really good man. And
yeah.
Keep going.
And he spoke about when they made the move from manual or electric typewriters from typewriters to computers. And he said for the first week they discovered they were screaming at each other, and they started, why are we doing this? And they realized that the absence of typewriter noise they were forced to yell at each other in the newsroom. So you could only imagine if a modern newsroom with computers is loud today, think of how the cacophony that they experienced before they made that technical move.
Sure. And that's, of course, my dear friend George Morrison, newspaper colleague and a very talented writer. But sure, I mean, it must have been like working on a factory floor to be with that many typewriters clanking at one time. Amazing.
Well, Danny, it's always fun, and let's keep this going. Need to bring you back more often. And congratulations on the fine work The Advocate does.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
877-217-5757. Stepping to the microphone is one Jason Brown. He's a partner in the Baton Rouge office of Keene Miller, practices in state and local tax business and corporate practice. And this world that we're in is evolving on the tax front. And one of the ways the state is using to try to solve some of its budget woes, and there is a big bonanza perhaps waiting on the other side, is the state and others, Louisiana certainly not alone, is embarking on an attempt to tax online sales. And this is a brave new world, and it has any number of legal intricacies. Jason, you're the expert. What are the major obstacles in doing this?
Well, I guess, first of all, thank you. Thank you, Jim, for having me on this morning. On June 21st, the Louisiana United States Supreme Court issued its decision, South Dakota v. Wayfair, and it is a brave new world. It did basically upend everything that we have come to, you know, expect in the precedent, at least in the sales tax world, which is probably the tax that most directly affects everyone. Everyone makes purchases, whether they're online or in a brick and mortar store at their in their particular city or wherever they happen to be. And so it's a lot has happened with this decision. One of the big things that I think, or the big takeaways, frankly, are a couple of things. First, from a consumer standpoint, is that now where previously there were many online sales that people do and do with increase in frequency, where they would not be charged sales tax, now they will be charged that sales tax. And that is large part because of this Supreme Court decision. The second thing is that businesses who do online, who sell retail and products online, are now going to have to, in large part, register and collect these taxes when they're making these sales. And that's going to mean expenses for them from a software standpoint. It's certainly going to mean expenses from them from a compliance standpoint. And this is a 50-state and 50 different state kind of tax regime. So where they may be located in Louisiana but selling to South Dakota, now they have to know South Dakota law because the standards have changed.
So it's going to be an interesting process, and as I say, it's evolving. Where is it right now?
Well, where it is right now, it's interesting. The United States Supreme Court ruled in the decision, the Wayfair decision, that physical presence is no longer the standard for whether or not a state can tax for sales tax purposes, or can require a retailer mm-hmm. to collect tax. That is now thrown out the door. What has been left in its wake, though, is really unsure. They remanded the particular case to the South Dakota Supreme Court for further deliberations and a ruling on whether the statute mm-hmm. is actually constitutional. So what that means is that we frankly don't know. And there is a lot of edges to be filled in and a lot of space to be filled in this decision, and that's going to be done by lower courts.
The legislature, though, the state legislature passed a law.
That's right.
It's part of the budget now. When can the state realistically expect to start collecting money?
Well, what the state has done has been to implement the Louisiana Sales and Use Tax Commission for remote sellers. And this is intended to be a central collection and registration body for all remote sellers for state and local taxes. There are some complications, though, of course. There are, two different, or there's the state-level tax regime, but then many different of the local tax regimes, which constitutionally and statutorily are able to have mm-hmm. their own. So there are some issues logistically with from a software standpoint mm-hmm. and how these folks will actually be able to register. It's going to take some time. Now, the target date, as we have been informed and as the Department of Revenue has recently put out, is January the 1st, 2019, for this to all start. It is not clear that the state or the commission is going to be able to meet that date, at least from a software standpoint. So there are going to be logistical issues there as well. But one of the important things, Jim, to understand even about this is that it still does not prevent the local tax jurisdictions from, for example, going out and auditing and imposing their own types of rules at later dates, rules on retroactivity.
How does this affect the consumer?
Well, it affects the consumer. For the direct consumer, the real difference is that they may actually, for online sales, actually be charged taxes when they're making their sales. Now, people who use Amazon, well, Amazon has been doing this for some time. They've been collecting taxes. But a lot of the other retailers have not. So there's not going to be a huge difference from a consumer standpoint.
And how much are we talking about ballpark for the state if this goes into effect January 1?
Well, now that's kind of difficult to determine. I think that a lot of states, including Louisiana, initially expected that there may be a great windfall. But again, the large, you think of the Amazon, which is kind of a behemoth that everyone mm-hmm. uses. Well, they've already been collecting. So it's not clear that this is going to have a huge impact on the state budget, but there's no doubt that there are a lot of taxes that have been left on the table because people don't remit use tax.
Oh, well, billions and billions of dollars of transactions that have not been taxed.
Across the country, that's right. Exactly right.
We'll spend some more time with Jason Brown, partner at Keene Miller, and we're talking about the brave new world of Internet sales and Internet sales taxes. 877-217-5757. Also, John Wirt on Black Klansmen after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. That's your Talk Louisiana number, and we're wrapping it up with Jason Brown, partner at Keene Miller, who's involved with taxing issues, and the legal implications of Internet sales taxes are quite extreme, and it affects, of course, consumers, it affects the government, it also affects businesses, Jason. So how are businesses adjusting to this brave new world?
Well, one of the most important things for businesses right now is just to figure out what the particular rules are going to be in each of the states into which they sell. And there are quite a few. Each of the states have been issuing guidance, some of it legislation, some of it regulation, some of it just written policy guidance. And they're all doing things differently. Some similarities, to be sure, but businesses are going to have to understand what their requirements will be in each of these states and figure out, do they trigger any of the laws that would require registration? It's going to be an administrative task, to be sure, perhaps a headache. I don't think I'm overstating it that way. And potentially a very large expense because there's software that's out there to help them mm-hmm. to be able to navigate this stuff, but it's not cheap, that's for sure. So there's going to be that expense as well.
Well, we thank you for joining us, and this is an evolving subject. I'm sure we'll be calling again.
Thank you,
Jason. Appreciate it. 877-217-5757. And over the weekend, the film Black Klansman from Spike Lee opened, and this is a controversial film, as many of Spike Lee's productions are. But this one hits pretty close to home. One of the featured characters is David Duke, who's played by an actor named Topher Grace. I think I'm saying that correctly. And for those who have not seen the film and want to know a little about it before we get to the reviewer, John Word, here's a bit of the trailer for Black Klansman.
There's never been a black cop in this city. We think you might be the man to open things up around here.
Hello,
this is Ron Stallworth calling.
Well, who am I speaking with?
This is David Duke,
Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That David Duke?
God, last time I checked. What can I do you for?
Well, since you asked, I hate blacks. I hate Jews, Mexicans and Irish, Italians and Chinese. But my mouth to God's ears, I really hate those black rats. And anyone else, really, that doesn't have pure white Aryan blood running through their veins.
I'm happy to be talking to a true white American.
God bless white America.
All right, that's a sampling of Black Klansman. And the movie premiered over the weekend. So far, it's brought in, I'm reading, about $12 million, but it was made for just $15 million, a relatively low-budget film by today's standards. So it's going to make money, and it's created a conversation. And when I say Black Klansman, it is Black, B-L-A-C-K-K-K, Klansman. So, John Wirt, you gave it a review in Friday's Advocate. What are your thoughts about this film?
Well, this is very much the return of Spike Lee. This is his best box office showing in a decade. And he's picked a topic that's really right for him, and he knows it. This is really his moment. He's a 61-year-old director. He's had big films in the past and gotten lots of attention. But in recent years, people haven't thought that much about him. So it's really a great moment for his career. He just happened to pick a topic, and very intentionally a timely topic. And it's, as I say, it's right for him. It speaks to the time as well as being history.
Well, it's 1972, and Ron Stallworth is hired as the first black detective in the Colorado Springs Police Department. And he is the one who infiltrates the KKK. How does a black person do this?
Well, Ron Stallworth, by the way, is a real person. And he's made some TV appearances, and he wrote a book about his experiences with all this. What he had to do, he made the mistake of talking, of giving the Klan his real name. And obviously, they liked what he said over the phone, because he won them over the telephone, but they had not seen him. Of course, he's a black man. So what he does, he recruits a white colleague to pretend to be Ron Stallworth. And they go back and forth. Meanwhile, the real Ron Stallworth is still talking to the Klan on the phone, including, as you mentioned before, David Duke.
And David Duke decides to visit Colorado Springs for Stallworth's induction into the Klan. What happens?
Oh, this is a crazy part of the movie. This is where things really go to hell in the movie. Now, mm-hmm. This is a true story. It's based on a true story, but of course, these things are fictionalized. I think you'd have to see the movie, and I don't want to give too much away. I think people have talked so much about this movie, they've given too much away. I don't like to spoil things. Even on public radio, I heard someone give the ending away. Now, the ending is very powerful, and it's a shocking ending. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to give that away.
Well, Spike Lee has done some great work. And as you say, his early work is considered by many reviewers to be his best. What's your favorite work to date of his?
You know, it might be Black Klansman.
We did Malcolm X, didn't he?
Yeah. And that's a more serious topic. And so, yeah, he did Malcolm X. He did When the Levees Broke in 2006, his mm-hmm. documentary, three-part documentary about HBO, I mean about Hurricane Katrina and the floods. So he's got a history of doing historical topics. And yeah. Black Klansman falls mm-hmm. into that. But it's also entertaining. It's like his most entertaining movie he's done in years.
Well, his career started with She's Got a Habit, which was a low-budget film that did very well. And as I mentioned today, big films are usually not done for $15 million. He did this on, by Hollywood standards, a shoestring budget.
Yes, it's a very low budget.
So the stars are not, you know, like Denzel Washington is not Ron Stallworth. It's a guy named John David Washington. Does he do well?
He's Denzel Washington's son. Which is very interesting. Of course, Spike Lee and Denzel Washington worked together in Malcolm X because Denzel played Malcolm X. He's very good. He's really great for the part. I heard that he didn't have to audition. Spike Lee just called him and said, let's do this, and everybody was on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a listener asked if Alec Baldwin's in the film.
Alec Baldwin shows up in the film in a comic sort of prelude, yes. He's not in it very much. It's a cameo.
But this is kind of a joke, I'm sure. But
yeah, it's a joke.
I'm looking. It says he plays a character named Dr. Kennebrew Beauregard. That sounds like a Louisiana name.
Uh-huh. And Topher Grace does play David Duke. And
does he do
Topher,
a good job?
If you watch TV sitcoms and stuff, he was in that 70s show, and he was also in Spider-Man 3 as a bad guy. So Topher is very good. It's a droll, amusing performance. It's kind of otherworldly how calm Topher Grace is as David Duke.
He's not a rabble rouser as far as how he speaks. And maybe the actions are definitely extreme, but he comes across as a reasonable person. That's how he almost got elected governor of Louisiana.
That's how Topher Grace portrays him. Yes.
And let us not forget, if not for the black citizens of Louisiana, David Duke would have been both U.S. Senator David Ernest Duke and Governor David Ernest Duke. He received a solid majority of white votes in this state in 1990 and 91 statewide. So he has fans, I'm sure, to this day. I'm sure many people, the 671,000 people who voted for him, John, they just didn't go away. Where are they? Somebody call us right now who voted for David Ernest Duke. 877-217-5757. Harry Belafonte's in this movie?
He has a cameo appearance, too. It's another one of the darker places where he shows up. I mean, dark. It's really a tragic scene that he's in. So, it's quite a cast. And even though it's a low-budget movie, I think a lot of people, they must have wanted to participate in this because they couldn't be making huge salaries.
Well, you said you didn't want to give away the ending, but the film does, I'm told, close with the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville from last year. And then this weekend was the one-year anniversary. What are your thoughts about using that as the way to finish the film?
Well, again, I don't like to give the endings away and things like that. When I saw the film, I try to go to something with just open eyes and not any expectations. And because they put that news footage from Charlottesville 1 year ago, at the end, I didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming. And it's devastating the way that it's managed in the film, the way that it's presented.
So on a 4-star scale, John Wirt rates this?
Well, I gave it 3.5 stars.
3.5. Why did you not give it 4?
4 is such a high standard. People expect
for you,
the greatest,
not for everybody.
Well, I think for everyone, people expect the greatest movie they've ever seen.
Well, last 4-star movie you saw.
well, there aren't that many of them. There aren't that many of them. And I liked last year. I liked The Shape of Water very much. So
four stars.
I think I might have given that 4 stars.
4 stars, but this is one that has people we know from real life, and Topher Grace plays David Duke. And understand Mr. Duke's not at all pleased with the portrayal of him on the big screen.
Mm.
But we'll be talking more tomorrow, same time, same place. For Becca Dill, we thank you for listening to WRKF. And until Tuesday, thanks for listening and stay tuned.